Hello and welcome to The Good Robot Andy's Season 1, Episode
10.
10.
Yes.
My name is Andy Balaam and this is...
Andy Cockerill, and we're in the same room again.
Again, we're in the same room.
What's going on?
And the film we're going to talk about today is...
Well, we're going to talk about two films, actually, but they've both got the same title. You've been waiting a long time for this, listener. We're going to talk about Far From the Madding Crowd.
I don't know whether we've still got that listener anymore, given the period of time it's taken us to get
around. I think maybe we've lost the original listener and we've got another new listener.
We may have another new listener. Someone asked me for the website of our podcast the other day.
Did
so
they?
Presumably someone will...
Were they drunk?
Listen. I can't say for sure. Before we start talking about Far From the Madding Crowd, we've had a couple of bits of feedback that we missed. We'd already had them by last podcast, but we missed them.
We missed them because we've grown so used to not getting any feedback that we didn't think we had any.
I've actually forgotten what they say, but I'm looking them up now.
Okay. Whilst you're looking those up, it's nearly Christmas. I just thought I'd throw that out there.
It is. I've got no internet, so I can't look them up.
You've got no internet? I have internet.
All right, why don't you look them up then?
Okay.
I'll look them up at the same time.
Let me do that. I've got internet because I'm running a Mac.
Well done, you.
I know. Okay.
We can cut this bit out.
Yeah. Or why would we want to?
Or
we have no comments on Slow West.
No, we had some comments on the previous.
Ah, John Wick. Here we go. So, yes. Farzi, who's, I think, have been a pretty regular contributor, probably the only contributor apart from us.
He's a long-time listener, approximately fourth-time commenter.
He said, for John Wick, the tagline should have been, they killed his dog, he killed them all. And then he went on to say, I like this film a lot. I don't think every movie needs to have a reason to be. This is pure entertainment. Andy B., I'm putting it you now, take a look at The Equalizer as well. I was doing quotes then.
Yeah. We could hear that.
Doesn't work on a podcast. As well as another great revenge movie. I think it might have a slight edge over Mr. Wick.
Yeah. So
this is Andy C speaking now. I think it doesn't.
Having not seen The Equalizer, but I believe having seen a poster for it, I'm extremely sceptical.
Yeah. The Equalizer has its moments.
Uh-huh. Okay, it looks like it doesn't have its moments.
It's too long. So John Wick is a really lean...
Yeah, it's short.
It's almost an exploitation movie in the way that it kind of executes itself. The Equalizer is too long, but the set pieces in The Equalizer are actually pretty good.
So who's in The Equalizer?
It's Denzel Washington.
Okay, it's not the film I'm thinking of.
No, so I think...
I'm thinking of a film with the guy out of Blade in it.
Oh, what? Wesley Snipes?
Yeah, there's a film with a name a bit like The Equalizer.
Oh, okay. But for
which looks rubbish. We're not talking about that, so that's good.
No, we're not talking about that. On a tangent for Denzel Washington, if we're talking about Denzel Washington revenge flicks, Man on Fire.
Yeah, we are talking about Denzel Washington revenge
Man on Fire is the one that...
okay.
That John Wick actually... You know, kind of surpasses in many ways. But Man on Fire is really good. That's Tony Scott, who sadly...
I think you mentioned it before.
Yeah. Tony Scott, who sadly died a few years ago. He threw himself off a bridge in Los Angeles, which is very sad. But he directed Man on Fire with great style and
cool
aplomb.
Well, I'm amassing a list of films I want to watch.
But you actually have some now. The Amazon Elves delivered you some
some movies. It's sitting on my... kitchen surface waiting to be watched. Is it what have I got?
I've got
John Wick
and Point Blank.
And Point Blank, both of which I'm very much looking for.
You've actually got, I think, the Danish version of Point Blank, which does have an English soundtrack.
Right, yeah. I was extremely amused by the front cover of that.
Yes.
Remind me what it's called? I forgot what it's called.
Point Blank.
In which it says, what does it say? Something about his women.
Something about that. Yeah.
He's brutal with his women and his... enemies or something fairly.
Yes, that's. I think that
fairly
was
of its time.
That's kind of what I was talking about last time. It's very much a film of its time,
right?
But it's
right,
very
right.
stylish.
Yeah, cool. Well, yeah, I'm very much looking forward to watching them. And at some point, listener, I'll let you know what I thought of John Wick. I feel like I already know what it's like. It'll probably be nothing like what I think it's going to be like.
It'll be better.
I hope so.
It'll be even better.
Okay, we better not hold off any longer.
No.
From talking about Far From the Madding Crowd and, of course, Far From the Madding Crowd.
Yes, so Far From the Madding Crowds, as this...
As this podcast will forever be known.
Will be known as. We've been working up to this for a long time. Uh-huh. I believe that your sister went and reread Far From the Madding Crowd.
Yes, she did, yes.
Reacquaint herself with it. And then we did her the honour of actually talking about
it. Well, we've left a polite interval in which she can read it.
Yeah, so the two versions that I'm going to talk about. First of all, I'll talk about the reason why I'm going to talk about this. It's because a version came out this year that was notable for being directed by Thomas Vinterberg.
Who's that?
He's one of the founders of the Dog Me 95 movement.
This means nothing to me.
It's a Danish film movement that he formed, among others, also with Lars von Trier.
Well, I've heard of him.
He's a bit of a provocative film director, mm-hmm. to say the least. Mm-hmm. So they started this movement. So when I heard that Thomas Vinterberg was making a movie of Far From the Madding Crowd, I was interested.
Right.
Because he's not the first name that you would pull out of a hat,
right.
to be making a period drama.
Right. I realise we've skipped me guessing what the plot is.
Okay. So the plot is...
So hang on, I have to guess
yes.
the plot.
Yes. Go on then.
Purely on the title and presumably some impressions of it from like the fact that it's a book,
mm-hmm.
and I think it must be old. I have basically transplanted it in my mind onto that film... That's about a lawyer defending someone in the deep south from...
To Kill a Mockingbird.
To Kill a Mockingbird. I've basically conflated it in my mind
yeah.
with To Kill a Mockingbird, so okay. I think it's that.
You think it's To Kill a Mockingbird?
Yes, I do.
It's not.
Oh. Please continue.
Okay.
I think that really added to the podcast.
I think it probably did. It probably had my wife rolling about on the floor with laughter. She finds our podcast incredibly funny.
Oh, good. Well done, her.
Which is nice.
that's very encouraging.
So, Far From the Madding Crowd was written by Thomas Hardy.
Right.
So it's
famous for writing boring books.
Yeah, I'm doing air quotes again. A classic.
Right.
I've never actually managed to get past page two or three of a Hardy book.
So respect to Kathy if she did manage to read it. Yeah, I don't think it was reread, actually. I think it was read. She wanted to read it before we spoilt it for her.
Okay, so I'm glad that she's done that.
If she has.
Because we are going to spoil it. So the plot of Far From the Madding Crowd is about a young woman who has a sort of what these days would be considered to be a small holding in Dorset. Mm. All of Hardy's books are set in Dorset. They're all country.
In a fictitious county?
Yes. I'm not sure about the county, but certainly the place names have changed.
Right.
So, slight digression is that Hardy's book, The Mayor of Casterbridge, the town of Casterbridge is actually Dorchester.
Right, okay.
And there are other things like that. But anyway, she has a small holding, but one of her relatives dies... And she inherits a very big country house. And all of the people who work there can choose to stay. And she also inherits a lot of land as well.
Mm-hmm.
And this, you know, at the time, it was unusual for a young woman, unmarried young woman, mm-hmm. to have that amount of property.
Right, okay.
So initially, you know, like the local folk are sceptical of whether she can actually make good on this.
Yeah.
But she proves her, you know, she proves that she's hardworking and is to be taken seriously.
Okay.
But doesn't mean she can't be swayed by a macho pretty face.
Uh-huh.
And she falls under the spell of Sergeant Troy, who is interestingly differently played in both versions. But anyway,
Troy is from... From that detective series with Bergerac in.
Really?
Yeah. You know the one
I mean? Bergerac?
No.
Oh, Midsummer Murders.
Midsummer Murders, yeah.
Is there a Sergeant Troy in that?
I don't know if he's a sergeant or not, but there's a Troy in that who amusingly is often referred to as Tory.
Ha!
That's probably one of the best bits of Midsommar Murders.
I've never seen Midsommar Murders. I'm actually surprised there's anyone still alive in that village, to be honest.
Well, yeah. The point is that each episode is 2 hours long. It's
what?
Unbearable.
And you've actually sat through it?
I've sat through a number of episodes, largely against my will.
Really? What, you tied you to a chair?
But I can tell you that the best part of it is when Troy gets called Tory.
Okay.
So if you like that kind of thing, you know.
I do, but I'm
don't
not
watch
sit,
it.
I'm not going to watch
it. Watch something that's shorter.
Yeah, okay. Far From the Madding Crowd, perhaps. I think that's definitely less
like
than 2 hours.
Like a whole film.
Long. Yes, it's less than 2 hours long. So she falls under the spell of Sergeant Troy, who's a bit of a damaged man. Mm-hmm. But we'll go into the specifics of how he's played differently across both versions
okay.
of the film.
That sounds interesting.
Which is quite interesting. I'm going to spoil the plot here anyway, before we go into it. He looks as though, you know, he sort of gets drunk one night and looks as though he's left.
Right.
After having a massive stag do and spending most of her money on this massive
stag do.
They're
going to get money. Okay, yeah.
Because he hasn't got any money.
Right.
He looks like he's drowned in the sea, so she presumes that he's dead.
Mm-hmm.
And is in mourning, but not really. I mean, she kind of realises that he was a bit of a ne'er-do-well.
Okay. they're so not married yet?
They are married, yes.
Oh, they got married.
They got married. He's presumed dead.
Right, okay.
And then she has a big sort of wake-type party, and he turns up. He's still alive.
Okay.
But one of her neighbours, who's a man who's been pursuing her, shoots him.
Okay.
Because
everyone's clear at this point that they'd rather be rid of him.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. Plus he is threatening her as well, that
okay.
kind of thing.
Okay, all right.
And so that is also handled differently across both versions of the film. And at the end of the movie, or at the end of the story, she realises that she wants to be with Gabriel Oak, who's a sheep farmer.
So not the neighbour.
No. No, the neighbour gets frozen out of it completely.
Right.
And again, that character is played very differently across both versions. Mm-hmm. But the character of Gabriel Oak is largely the same.
Okay.
You know, he's a steadfast, solid...
He's a simple man.
Maybe. He's good with sheep.
Okay.
That's probably not how I meant to say it.
Simplicity is not a prerequisite for being good with sheep.
No, definitely. I mean, he's a solid guy. He's a good guy to have around, basically. And he's one of the few people that she knows who tells her the truth.
Okay, okay.
At any given moment, which is not always what you want to hear.
So far, this sounds like one of those things like Charles Dickens books, where a load of things happen to characters.
Mm. Things do happen.
And you're not always clear what the arc of the story is. I'm thinking of A Tale of Two Cities, which I've tried to struggle through recently, in which all kinds of events happen, which I think you're supposed to draw your own conclusions about whether they're good or bad.
Yes.
I need to be spoon-fed a bit more.
I think Far From the Madding Crowd is less circumspect than Dickens.
Right. I mean, Dickens was also writing soaps, wasn't he?
Yes.
All right, okay.
In installments. So,
carry on.
So to talk about... You know, these two different versions, which are separated by many years, in fact.
How many years?
In fact, the same age as I am. So the first one was released in 1967.
Wow, that's a long time ago.
I know, I'm really old. And the most recent one was released this year.
Right, which is relatively young.
Which is relatively young, yes. So the 67 version was directed by a guy called John Schlesinger. He's a British film director.
Heard of him. I don't know. I don't think I've seen any film.
His other film of great note would be Midnight Cowboy.
Which I've definitely heard of.
With Dustin Hoffman and John Voight.
Okay.
Which is about... it's about a kind of gigolo guy who comes from Texas, I think, and ends up in New York and hangs out with a character called Ratso Rizzo, played by... Dustin Hoffman.
Ratso Rizzo.
Yeah.
Very good.
Who's a sleazy little guy.
Uh-huh. Sounds like it.
Midnight Cowboy's a really good film.
How's he supposed to end up when he's called Ratso Rizzo?
I don't know. I don't know. So that was John Schlesinger's version. Now, what's interesting about that is that it was shot by a guy called Nicholas Roeg, or Nick Roeg, okay, who later in his career would be a film director in his own right and made The Man Who Fell to Earth, with David Bowie.
Right.
A film called Don't Look Now, which is an adaptation of a Daphne du Maurier story.
I genuinely might have seen that.
Okay. It's got a really raunchy sex scene in it, Don't Look Now, that's really quite...
Maybe that's why I've heard of it.
Quite kind of... I watched it with my parents when I was young. And it's one of those things...
Can I describe what you did then to the listener?
Yeah, go on, yeah.
It's sort of like a pathetic puppy trying to defend itself from a large scary
dog. You know when
dog.
Homer Simpson does his shiver?
Yeah.
It was like that.
Okay, is that's presumably not the reaction you're supposed to have to that scene.
Well, no, the scene itself is really well shot,
right,
but it's not the kind of thing you would want to watch with your parents.
No.
So he directed that. He also directed an adaptation of Roald Dahl's The Witches as well, with Angelica Houston. So he Nicholas Roeg became a very successful filmmaker in his own right, but he was a cinematographer on Far From the Madding Crowd.
We've gone a long way. Oh, no, we haven't. I thought we'd gone a long way from the
point.
No,
we're back.
Okay. I heard the name of the film.
And the 67 version, as the title character, which is a character called Bathsheba. Oh, no, hang on a second.
Just look that up on the internet.
I am.
Okay.
Bathsheba Everdeen.
Bathsheba?
Bathsheba Everdeen, yeah. Now, what's interesting about that is that the surname Everdeen is the same as Katniss Everdeen of the Hunger Games.
Okay.
So, I don't know, I can't remember who wrote those Hunger Games books, but they've taken that surname as a strong, independent woman, transplanted it into this, sort of despotic future.
Is that the actor name or the character name?
No. So, the person who, in the 1967 movie, Julie Christie, plays Bathsheba Everdeen. And Julie Christie, at that time, was a massive star.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, she was in this. She also played the lead in Dr. Zhivago. Loads of other films. I think she might also be in Point Blank as well, I think.
Right.
So she is that character. The character of Gabriel Oak, the sheep farmer, is played by Alan Bates.
Okay.
Who is, very... I think he's probably... Alan Bates, film-wise, for me anyway, is probably most famous, apart from this film, for being with Oliver Reed in Women in Love, which is Ken Russell's version of D.H. Lawrence's Women in Love, in which he and Oliver Reed engage in a naked wrestling scene. And Oliver Reed was reportedly...
Would you like to watch that with your parents?
That's another one I watched with my parents, yeah. Oliver Reed was reportedly unhappy that Alan Bates's man parts were bigger than his.
Right.
You can imagine Oliver Reed being quite unhappy about that kind of thing. Because he was a bit of a man's man. But that's an eye-popping scene.
Right.
Yeah, they are going for it in Women in Love. Right.
I watched... what's the Kevin Smith film?
Do you want me to start listing Kevin Smith
films? The first
films?
One, the good one.
Oh, Clarks.
Clarks. Yes. I watched Clarks with my parents-in-law.
Oh, my word, did you? Rude stuff in that, isn't
it? Yeah, when I was quite young as well, so I was less immune to embarrassment. And it contains descriptions of some things that we won't be mentioning on the podcast.
No, we won't. But it is funny, Clarks, isn't it?
Very, very funny. Yeah. And I think probably my parents-in-law would have enjoyed it, but they couldn't be seen to enjoy it when I was there. But I was enjoying it a lot.
Yeah, good.
It's very good.
So
very
Alan Bates plays Gabriel Oak. Peter Finch, who's another actor who turned up in a movie called Network later on in the 1970s, I think, which is about a newsreader who completely loses his marbles and wants to start telling it like it is.
Is that the I'm Mad as Hell? And
yes.
What is it? I'm Mad as...
And I'm Not Going to Take It Anymore.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. There's so many films. You keep mentioning films from the old days, especially. I want to watch. The thing about that is when you actually watch films from the old days, even when they're good, they are quite boring.
Yeah, the pacing was different.
Yeah.
Terence Stamp plays Sergeant Troy. Right. Terence Stamp, of course, famously played General Zod in Superman 2.
Right, okay.
Among many other great things, but remembered for the line, "Kneel before Zod." Which is a great line.
Yeah.
So those that's the like the core of four characters of Far From the Madding Crowd.
Right.
So that's the 1967 version.
Mm-hmm.
The 2015 version has as Bathsheba Everdeen, Kerry Mulligan, who's obviously a very big star now. Famously became a big star because of a role in Doctor Who. She was in a Doctor
in
Light. In David Tennant's first series, there was an episode called Blink.
Yeah.
About which was the first time we saw the Weeping Angels.
Okay.
And that was Kerry Mulligan. That was her. I mean, that probably wasn't her debut, but that was the first time I became aware of Kerry Mulligan.
Right.
And
we should probably do a bonus podcast about how annoying Doctor Who is.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I like Doctor Who.
Yeah, well, I seem to keep watching it, despite how annoying it is.
Okay.
But probably we shouldn't go into that.
Well, we can do. Anyway, so Kerry Mulligan plays Bathsheba Everdeen.
Uh-huh.
The character of Gabriel Oak in the 2015 version is played by a Danish actor called... Oh, no, he's Belgian. Matthias Schoenaerts, who's been in a lot of stuff in the last couple of years.
None of this is registering with me at
all. He's very, very... You know, he's got that kind of Belgian kind of inscrutability. You know, he's really very, very good.
I wondered what you were going to say.
Easy on the eye for the ladies as well, which is always nice.
Inscrutable and easy on the eye. What more could a lady want? And European, although Belgian.
What's very interesting about the 2015 version is that the character of William Boldwood, who's the neighbour, is played by Michael Sheen.
Okay.
And Michael Sheen is really... Well, he's one of my favourite actors, Michael Sheen. I think listeners will probably know him from... He played David Frost in the movie Frost Nixon. I think also on stage as well.
And he's not the Sheen that misbehaves?
No, that's Charlie.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's Charlie Sheen.
And he wasn't the president?
No, that's Martin.
Right.
Sheen.
But they are related, right?
No.
Some of them are related.
Yes.
But not this one.
Yeah, so Charlie Sheen is Martin Sheen's son.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, okay.
As is Emilio Estevez.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Better
in fact,
name.
Martin Sheen's original name was Estevez.
Right. Okay.
Ramon Estevez.
Okay.
There you go.
Cool.
So we digress yet again. So Michael Sheen plays William Baldwood.
Hang on. Which Sheen?
Michael.
Right.
The Welsh one.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's Welsh. Okay. I was really not imagining him as Welsh.
And finally, an actor called Tom Sturridge, who I'm not really familiar with, who plays Sergeant Troy.
Okay.
So that's the core of four. And for the most part, Alan Bates and Matthias Schoenaerts kind of take the same approach to Gabriel Oak, in that he's sort of steadfast. He's, you know, tells it like it is. And
so he's around all through, is he?
He's, yeah. He wanders off in a huff at one point, but
fair enough.
Gets is persuaded to come back because there's actually quite a funny scene, not so much in the 67 version, but quite funny in the 2015 version, which all of her sheep, have eaten the wrong type of food, and their stomachs are all blown up, and they're all kind of rolling around on the grass with they can't basically evacuate the gas from their stomachs. So Gabriel Oak is persuaded to return and fix the problem, and he does so by basically poking a hole in their stomachs, to which the sheep go and get smaller and get up and just start walking around. Yeah, exactly as you would imagine it to be. And it's, I'm sure that it was quite funny to watch, but it's certainly funny to watch on screen.
Yeah.
As he walks around a field poking sheep in the stomach with what looks like a knife.
Uh-huh.
Presumably their stomachs will be fine.
I don't really
get that, but so that character is pretty much the same throughout both films, obviously played by different actors, but it's interesting to see the difference in approach of the character of Bathsheba Everdeen across many years.
She's the powerful lady.
Yes. So I'll read you the poster tagline from Far From the Madding Crowd of 67, which says, "A willful, passionate girl and the three men who want her!" Exclamation mark.
Wow.
Yes.
That sounds as it is.
Yeah. So in the 67 version, she's played as being slightly coquettish, a bit playful.
Mm-hmm.
And she plays with the affections of her neighbour. In the 67 version, played by Peter Finch, and in the recent one by Michael Sheen, not the president or the hell-raising son.
Yeah.
But in the 2015 version, although she does play with his affections, she does it in a slightly different way,
mm-hmm.
in a more less coquettish,
mm-hmm.
less kind of sort of less with less of a glint in her eye about mm-hmm. it, really. And when the neighbour sort of reveals himself as being a suitor for her, in the 67 version, she kind of makes light of it and sort of plays with his affections.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in the 2015 one, she's very steadfastly saying, "I'm sorry, you know, nothing's mm-hmm. ever going to happen here."
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So those things are handled quite differently, and that's very interesting. And what that does is it gives Michael Sheen, in the version that came out this year, it gives him more to work with.
Mm-hmm.
And his performance as William Baldwin is beautifully nuanced. And, you know, he says so much without actually saying anything.
Right, yeah.
He says it with his eyes and with the way he stands. You know, he communicates emotion
mm-hmm.
and feeling without actually saying anything. And that's markedly different from Peter Finch in the 67 version, who's all bluster and... You know, you can tell he's doing a lot of acting,
mm-hmm.
basically.
Mm-hmm.
So those approaches are very different.
Yeah.
And Sergeant Troy, who's the sort of ne'er-do-well, in both versions, you see the reason why he's gone off the rails.
Okay.
In that he thinks he's been jilted. He thinks he's been left at the altar, when in fact his intended bride has gone to the wrong church.
This is some other person.
Who
this
isn't
is before
really,
it all started.
Who isn't really. She is kind of important, but yeah, you see this happen.
Okay.
And he becomes very disillusioned, and then he latches onto the first person he meets, which is
right. Okay.
Which is Bathsheba Everdeen, and they end up getting married. And there's a scene in both films in which he proves how manly he is
mm-hmm.
and how skillful he is with a sword. By I'm going to try now and explain this in a way where people can't actually see it.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sure they can look it up on the internet. This scene is probably
use gestures, and I'll describe them.
So what he does is he gets his sword out,
uh-huh.
his real sword, not his metaphorical sword.
And he's wielding his
his
figurative sword,
and he basically slashes at the air around her,
uh-huh.
showing how adept he is at not hitting something.
Right.
And then he cuts a little bit of hair off her head,
uh-huh.
and she is absolutely, you know. Amazed by this,
right? She thinks this is a good thing.
Back when there was no Xbox, this was entertainment, basically.
Right. So she's not sort of say annoyed with him for endangering her or for say cutting some of her hair off.
Initially, she's kind of unimpressed, but as this goes on, she realizes that this macho guy might be the man for her.
Right. So this is the classic lesson that we're constantly taught by film and television.
Yeah.
If you're an idiot, then you won't get the woman. But if you just plug away,
yep.
being a bigger idiot,
yep.
you definitely will.
Yeah, eventually you will.
Right.
So
that's what they like. Really so this, big idiots.
This scene happens in both films. In the in the 67 version, it happens in the open air.
Mm-hmm.
So in like what looks a bit like Maiden Castle in Dorchester.
Mm-hmm.
But my wife's grandfather says was Egerton Hillthorpe, which is also in Dorset.
Okay.
But in the 2015 version, it happens in the woods.
Right.
In sort of an enclosed space, and he kind of hacks away at sticks and things like that with his sword and stuff like that. And it's all very kind of erotic and
right.
and a bit rude.
Okay.
But the 67 version of that scene, the interpretation of that scene, maybe because of the time it was made, it's slightly more ripe.
Okay. You know,
slightly more rude.
Right, yeah.
Without actually doing anything.
Mm-hmm.
But in both versions, she becomes besotted with him.
Right, just because of his the way he wields his sword.
Yeah, yeah. It's an amazing scene.
Right.
By the way, listener, I urge you to probably not to go and try this.
No.
Because you probably are not as adept with a sword, because people were, you know, he's a sergeant in the army. People were trained to use these swords. So kids, don't try this at home.
Is it not really rubbish, that scene?
No, it's really good. Okay. It's really, really good. It's really good. I mean,
is it, though?
It's a bit funny, but the thing with it is, because it's not brief, because it keeps going, you kind of laugh at it and then you stop laughing. And think, okay, this is actually working. You know,
okay.
This might actually be working and getting the girl by waving his sword around.
Right. I'm skeptical.
So that character is handled pretty much in the same way in both films.
Mm-hmm.
In that when he then goes to spend a vast amount of money on a wedding and a stag party, that's all of her money. And he's now basically, he's got all of her money to do with as he wishes, and he spends his time mostly gambling it away.
Cool.
To which she's pretty unhappy, but can't really do anything about it.
Okay.
And then, because there's no money left, he goes for a swim in the ocean, presumably off the coast of Dorset, maybe Burton Bradstock or something like that, and looks like he's drowned because his body is never found. To which, of course, William Baldwin is quite happy about this because he thinks he might have a shot now, grieving widow and all that kind of thing. But she's still, she's sort of coming around to that fact that she's got no money.
Right, okay.
William Baldwin is rich.
Right.
But of course then Sergeant Troy turns up. And in the 67 version, although William Baldwin does shoot him, it's kind of an afterthought. I mean, it's in the book, but in the movie, it's kind of done as an afterthought. But in the 2015 version, it's very, very powerful.
Right.
That's
the main point.
He's arguing, Sergeant Troy is arguing with her outside the house. And William Baldwin walks out with a shotgun. And very pointedly unloads both barrels on Sergeant Troy.
Okay.
In a way that almost has you standing up applauding him for doing what other people have wanted to do for a long time.
Okay.
But of course Bathsheba doesn't end up with William Baldwin.
No.
And it's there that we see, I was alluding to the stuff with Michael Sheen when he does this amazing performance that he knows he's never going to get the girl.
Yeah.
But he still behaves honourably.
Mm-hmm.
And what ends up happening is that Gabriel Oak is supposed to be leaving the country. I think he's supposed to be going abroad. And he comes back.
Right. It all works out.
Yeah, it all works out. That's handled slightly differently as well.
Mm-hmm.
In the 2015 version, it's very much he's come back and then you see them walking off into the distance and the movie ends. But in the 67 version, that's handled slightly differently, although not massively differently. So
it does sound more like this. There's a beginning, a middle, and an end.
Yeah.
Which is the thing with Dickens that I was objecting to, is that there's all these different beginnings and middles and ends and characters and places.
There's one thing of note is that during the stag party, there's one of the hay bales looks like it's going to blow away. This must be set in like late autumn,
right
after the harvest, and Gabriel Oak is out there trying to tie it down on his own, and Sergeant Troy has forbidden anyone else from going out to help.
Okay,
so he's in charge now.
Yeah,
but his new wife goes out to help Gabriel Oak.
Right,
and you kind of see her loyalties already.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's probably regretting marrying this ne'er-do-well.
So is she more? So the coquettishness and stuff, it sounds like in the earlier version, perhaps people are sort of threatened by a woman who's capable and they've sort of made her a bit of a...
Yes.
A manipulator.
Yes. That's a very good point, actually. I think there's,
is it less like that in the recent one?
Yes.
Right.
So because a lot of time has passed.
Yes.
You know, I'm as old as this film. This film's really old.
Yeah.
So a lot of
We've covered this.
A lot of time has passed since that first one was released.
Uh-huh.
And although equality still doesn't exist between men and women,
there's a bit less aggression towards a woman with influence.
Yes.
Hopefully.
Yes, there is. There is. I mean, that is still portrayed in that some people who work at the estate are not happy to stay
mm-hmm.
and working for a woman.
Mm-hmm.
But most of them are.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them have a wait-and-see attitude. And mm-hmm. that exists in both versions.
Mm-hmm.
But there's one person in both versions, and I can't remember the name of the character, but in the 67 version, it's played by a guy called Freddie Jones,
mm-hmm.
who is, I remember, notable for having very big eyebrows.
Okay.
he's like in Dune.
Like they used to have in the past.
He's in Dune, actually.
Right. Oh, right.
Yeah, he's one of the characters in Dune.
Is he sporting his eyebrows?
Yes, okay. Very much so. Yeah. He is the one who, from the outset, wants to get people behind the new owner. And
mm-hmm. okay.
You know, he's very aggressive. He's a bit like a party whip in mm-hmm. politics. You know, mm-hmm. he's very aggressively
mm-hmm.
getting people behind the new owner and not being negative about it.
So you say you haven't read the book?
I haven't read the book.
Do you have an impression of which of those two things or something else she is in the book? Or do you know was Hardy a feminist?
Well, I've heard people say that Hardy was not a feminist. In fact, maybe he was a bit of a misogynist.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that maybe the 67 version is possibly closer to how Bathsheba Everdeen is written mm-hmm. in the book.
Mm-hmm.
But in the 2015 version, her character is far more nuanced
mm-hmm.
and rounded.
Mm-hmm.
Than in the 1967 version. When I'm talking like the 67 version is not as good,
mm-hmm.
that's not true.
Okay.
They're both really great films right. in their own way.
Right. And is she the protagonist in both of these
yes.
films?
Yes.
Yeah. See, that in itself seems unusual.
It is. I mean, if you take that, if we go back to that, the poster.
Mm-hmm.
I've forgotten the name of this. I'm having a senior moment here. What's the name? The tagline on the poster.
Right, yeah, right.
You know, a willful, passionate girl and the three men who want her.
Yeah.
If you were to look at that on a poster, you think, "Oh, that sounds a bit racy."
Yeah.
But actually, it's not.
Right. Yeah.
At all, apart from the scene with the sword.
Yeah.
I'm now flapping my hand around again.
Andy is flapping hand.
Yeah, my flapping hand. The character in the 2015 version is more nuanced, but it's still the same character.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It hasn't been retrofitted
right.
to make Bathsheba Everdeen an ass-kicking
yeah.
superhero.
Yeah.
It's the same
yeah.
person.
Yeah. Yeah.
With the same lines, it's just been done differently.
And was it worth making the remake?
Yeah, I think so.
Well, it's not a remake, is it? It's another
version. It's a new version. Yeah, absolutely. I think that it did very well at the
right.
box office.
Okay.
Yeah. And I think that it was worth it in terms of it brings this story to a new generation.
Mm-hmm.
And that new generation might actually take the time to watch the version from 1967.
Yeah, or read the book.
Or read the book.
Although
I don't read books. I don't read books. So
it's going a bit far. It's already made one person read the book, if it has.
Yeah, exactly. So that's surely a good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, so to talk about the, very briefly, because I'm aware that time is marching on, but to talk about the cinematography of both
mm-hmm,
versions,
mm-hmm.
is that Nicholas Roeg was a very, very talented cinematographer.
Mm-hmm.
The 67 version, maybe by virtue of the fact that, you know, films were kind of very, very widescreen and had big
mm-hmm.
epic scope.
Mm-hmm.
There's more of that in the 67 version. There's
right.
more pastoral, what's the word I'm thinking of? Bucolic.
Right.
There's more of a bucolic
well
look about it, which means that it's something that's indicatively countrified.
Right.
You know, that's what bucolic. It sounds like an insult, bucolic, but actually
right.
it's not.
Okay.
So there's more of that. And in the recent version, the 2015 version, it looks more contemporary.
Mm-hmm.
So although there are some wide shots, there's also a lot of more close-up shots mm-hmm. and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just looking to see who shot... Oh, yeah, so Charlotte Bruce Christiansen, who's a Danish cinematographer,
mm-hmm.
she shot the 2015 version.
Right.
And she's worked with Vinterberg before. She worked with him on a movie called The Hunt.
Okay.
With Mads Mikkelsen, who was in Casino Royale, as the man with the dodgy eye.
Right.
The what was his name? I've forgotten the character's name.
Yeah. He was the most annoying thing about Casino Royale.
Didn't you like him?
No, it was all right. Well, it was the poker.
You didn't like the poker?
Just the poker scene could have been so much more than it was. And I wasn't sure what his tale was supposed to be telling me either. But anyway, let's not go there.
she shot the latest one. Just looking to see who did the music for...
So is it a classic costume drama? Because if so, I just kind of write it off.
No. I think
so. Convince me to watch it, even though it's a costume drama.
Okay, so the 67 version is more of a costume drama.
Mm-hmm.
But the 2015 version is very much a contemporary story
mm-hmm.
in costume.
Right, it just happens to be.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's to do with Kerry Mulligan and Michael Sheen
mm-hmm.
are the two actors who take those roles and twist them and change them and make them
mm-hmm.
more relevant to a 2015 audience.
Okay.
I think that Gabriel Oak and Sergeant Troy are pretty much portrayed the same.
Right.
It's not a bad thing, it's just they're portrayed the same across both versions.
Yeah.
But I think that Michael Sheen in particular, his mm-hmm. performance in the 2015 version is really something.
And that is an interesting character, isn't it?
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. I think that's all I want to say
about
it. Cool.
I think that covers Far From the Madding Crowds.
I'm just doing a victory thing.
Or is it Fars from the Madding
Crowds? Fars from the Madding Crowds.
Fars from the Madding Crowd.
From the Madding Crowds is.
That's that. All right, plug something, quickly.
Okay, I'm going to quickly plug. Are you going to ask me what it was for or anything like that?
Okay. Yeah, let me do that.
We'll do that quickly.
All right, what's the point of it?
Okay, so it brings a classic story.
Uh-huh.
To a new audience
uh-huh.
in a way that they can relate to.
And what's the point of the story? Is it about how women are the same as men?
I've got
it's
it.
It's not, is it?
No. The point of the story is that what you want may have been under your nose all the time.
And what you didn't want, you shouldn't take just because of the sword-waving thing.
So, you know, Gabriel Oak, from the very outset, he's in it from the beginning to the end.
Mm-hmm.
Gabriel Oak is the guy. That she should have been with.
That's nice. I like that.
Yeah.
That's a good answer. Okay. Now plug something.
Okay, so I present a radio show on Glastonbury FM 107.1 if you live in the area. They're getting a bigger transmitter. I'm not sure how far that goes. Also available online. I present that show on Thursday between 6 and 7. That's a movie review show. I usually review 3 movies. Also look at TV movies that are on at the weekend, the coming weekend. I look at what's on at the local theatre that also shows films. I play loads of film-related and some new music as well. There are podcast highlights of that show, which is just the talking, so it's just me blabbering on iTunes and other podcast things. Search for Movie Mashup, one word, no camel case, no caps. That's it. Over to you.
Efficient plug, well done. Someone should provide in a machine readable way the names of upcoming films on TV so that I can make my TV record them automatically.
I can do that.
You should totally do that, and I should consume it, because I always hear like a week after it's been on about stuff that was on TV that I should have watched.
Well, if you give me the format that you need me to provide it in, I'll do it for you.
Let's do that. That would be really cool.
Okay.
We should totally do that.
Yeah.
My plugging, there's an Android game that I wrote called Rabbit Escape. Well, actually, it's not just me that wrote it. Now other people have contributed, which is very, very exciting.
That is exciting.
Anyway, it's called Rabbit Escape. You can find it on the Android, on the Play Store. And if you go to the About link in the corner of the Good Robot Andy's website.
A boot
link. You'll find on the About page.
A boot
page. You'll find links to all this stuff and loads more stuff, like my website, which has got loads of stuff on it.
Yeah, your website's really cool.
It's got loads of stuff on it.
Yeah.
I think that's it.
I think that's it.
See you next time.
I think it's probably going to be a Merry Christmas, because I don't want to do another one.
Yeah. Everyone have a good Christmas.
Yes.
Including listeners to the show.
Including our one listener.
Well done.
Okay. Keep up the good work.
See you next time.
Bye.